Voice of the Cape Drive Time, 91.3 is the frequency. 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp line. And yes, indeed, feel free to query, comment, rant, rave, and or criticize. Some 250 million children under the age of five, about 25% in low to middle income countries, are at a higher risk of not achieving their full potential due to extreme poverty or receiving nurturing care. Online is South African representative of the African Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, Dr. Anusha Lahman. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. And just to correct you, that's 40% of children younger than 5 years.
40%.
Really is 40%.
Wow, that makes it even more serious.
Absolutely.
And of course, I mean, 250 million, and you start doing a percentages, it's a lot of zeros on the page, isn't it? But of course, the long-term effects on society are quite dire, aren't they? Just run us through what happens when we find that people are not poverty and all these things we're talking about.
Absolutely. So thank you for the platform, because I think that we often talk about poverty and we just attribute it to socioeconomic status and financial burden. But really, it is a poverty of mental health and mental health access. And what we're really interested in is the fact that we are missing millions of children, as you have just heard, that children who experience adverse childhood experiences. So for that, we don't just mean poverty and, you know, lack of safety, lack of food and good nutrition, but really lack of nurturing care. And nurturing care is what we talk about when parents are so traumatized. Parents are mentally ill. Parents have substance use disorders that are not adequately or efficiently treated. They are unable to provide children with that safe, nurturing environment. And as a result, children take this disadvantage into the greater risk later on in adult life. And for that, we mean the children who have been exposed to lots of the social and emotional disadvantage very early on. We're talking the first 1,000 days of life. These children grow up to be adults who have higher risks of physical health problems. So things like cardiovascular disease, higher rates of cancers, but also higher rates of mental illness. And if you think about it, if you are physically and mentally unwell later on in life, you're much less likely to be productive in the workforce. And so there are lots of stats going around, but the important thing for you to remember is that if you have a poor start in life, that equals sometimes to a total loss of a quarter of your adult income per annum. And that's huge if you think about it.
It's actually scary if you think about it, the potentialities of you know, what we are currently discussing, that how critically important the early days are of a child. You know, up until the age of five, a lot of people tell me that a child is a piece of blotting paper in its early years.
Absolutely. It's a sponge. And, you know, we always talk about the first 1,000 days, and people think, oh, well, that's from the time you're born till 3 years after that. But actually, it's from conception. And if you think about moms who are really suffering intimate partner violence, exposures to trauma, poverty, unemployment, mental illness that's not treated, who really are struggling, and that's across the African continent, including in South Africa. When we think about these pregnant women who are not being screened for mental health issues, because everyone thinks, oh, you know, this is just really what the country is going through, we're missing an opportunity to treat these mothers who are really critical in terms of helping children develop their potential. So part of what we're trying to do and advocate for is just awareness that there is so much more to developing that human brain, that sponge, that blotting paper, if you like to think about it, than just providing food. We have to think beyond that. Food is just going to let them survive, of course. All children have a basic human right to have a shelter, to have adequate access to food and education, but that mental health and that well-being. And you know, it's not some magical concept. It's about relationships. And if we have caregivers who are not mentally well, how are they going to invest in that relationship?
No, absolutely. You know, that is such an important question. And of course, the condition of a mother, for example, during a pregnancy, from what I gather, can condemn another human being to a very terrible life, either through the mother, for example, not having enough nutrition, not being healthy, or even being a drug addict or an alcoholic or something like that. It all has a huge impact.
Yeah, you know, huge impact, and condemn is a strong word as well, Sherry. If I think about it, it's just the vulnerability. And that also brings into question when we think about children who are born into situations which their mothers have no control over. You know, a lot of teenagers are raped, are forced into slavery in Africa, but in South Africa, lots of drug abuse, gang violence, intimate partner violence. That's really not the fault of the mother at all, you know, but they carry this vulnerability with their children. And so when we think about it, it's not that nothing can be done. It's about early intervention. So we hear a lot about, you know, the first 2 years of the child's life, it's make or break. A lot of bad things can happen, and that's true. But it's also a huge potential for intervention. In that first 2 years of the child's life, if we're able to intervene early, and intervention doesn't mean moving a child from its mother or caregiver. It means giving the mother and child an opportunity to recover, to get treatment, to get that support, to have that good start in life.
Yeah, I like the idea you're talking positively about intervention, because all too often people just throw their hands in the air and say, well, it's a problem, I can't do anything about it, and then they carry on complaining, normally in social media. How much does it take to do these interventions? Because sometimes, yes, a lot is needed, but on other occasions, it seems sometimes just something like compassion can change
Absolutely.
A person's life.
And thank you for saying that, and for also mentioning social media, because I think very often we have these ridiculous things, these like surveys mothers like to take on social media about 10 things I do now that's going to make my child a genius, you know, or let me enroll my child into every single early intervention kind of stimulation, and that's going to make my child the cleverest. It's not about that. It's about us being able to be compassionate, like you say, and be aware when young mothers and their partners are struggling. Because we have this delusion that when mothers give birth and when they have children, it's the most beautiful experience and it's the best thing ever, and, you know, it's what they looked forward to, and it's this magical experience with no bad things. It's not true. It may be magical and wonderful at particular times, but it's also hard. And if you think about providing continuous care to a child that's screaming, that's needing to be fed 24 hours a day without any help, that takes a strain on even the most mentally well mother. So imagine now if you're a mother who's vulnerable, doesn't have a job, who's in a difficult relationship, who's financially insecure, who has untreated depression and anxiety. How are you able to manage with your own mental health, let alone caring for another vulnerable individual? And so it's about being compassionate, but it's also about recognizing when women need care and not being afraid to suggest that they get help, that they get screening, and not criticize when they are being treated for mental illnesses.
No, absolutely. I mean, something that I haven't heard a lot about in a long time is a syndrome. They call it postnatal depression. I know I'm oversimplifying a very complicated thing.
Yeah.
But one no longer hears people talking about this. And I think to myself sometimes, but we haven't changed as people, so it's still there. But where has it gone to?
So let me shatter that bubble. It's not being talked about because it's so prevalent. So worldwide prevalence of postpartum depression is 10%. Do you know what the prevalence rates are in South Africa? And that's at three different sites. It's 35%.
Wow.
That's
yeah.
three times higher than anywhere else in the world. And that means it's there. We're missing it. We're either afraid or ashamed to talk about it, or we're normalizing it. We're saying mothers do cry all the time. Fathers get upset all the time. They do feel miserable and don't want to get out of bed and feel like dying or feel like they're doing a bad job. And it's not true. It's mental illness that can be treated. So postpartum depression is very common in South Africa. It's extremely poorly recognized. Less than 10% of women with postpartum illnesses get any treatment in South Africa. And we also have to recognize that it's not just the mother, but it's the partner of the mother. So even fathers can have postpartum depression. And the reason we're interested in it is because it doesn't just affect the adults, like we're saying, it has long-term developmental outcomes in the baby.
Yeah, that's interesting that you've brought the father into the equation. I'm sure if it's not being recognized, then potential conflicts in the marital situation which affect the children are just being glossed over, that we're missing a huge chapter in the book, as it were.
100% correct. And I think that, you know, this idea that we have that entering parenthood is this easy, smooth thing. I'm going to read these books, I'm going to go for these workshops, and I'm going to be this perfect parent. And the reality is very different. And so young parents feel quite ashamed. You know, how is everybody else coping? Why is everybody else so happy and putting up these beautiful family pictures on Facebook or Instagram or whatever it is? So these unrealistic expectations we have is what feeds it. And so you're right, we get marital conflict, we get intimate partner violence, we get high levels of anxiety, substance use, and all of this affects the child. Because the recipient, unfortunately, of this cycle is the innocent child in it.
No, absolutely. And just anecdotally, one thing that I've noticed being a parent of a number of years is that often by default healing comes. What I'm referring to here specifically is that a mother may think that her problem is completely unique, that her child mm-hmm. has got a unique problem, and they go to, just say for argument's sake, a social function where there's another mother of the same age, and once they start discussing, they begin to realize, hang on a minute, the other lady's also got the same problem,
yeah.
And it's almost as if the lights go on and
absolutely.
You see the body language changes, attitudes change. It's an amazing process, isn't it? Socialization
It's about giving mothers or parents, because there are a lot of mothers who are not biological mothers, but foster mothers, grandmothers, people who are taking care, who are playing this important role in children's lives. It is about giving people permission to accept when things are not going okay. And then you'll realize there are many people who are sharing more of that experience than of things just being, you know, perfect and according to what the baby handbook is. Remember, babies don't read that handbook.
That's right.
And so when you are stuck in the situation where, you know, a lot of our mothers are no longer living in the luxury of an extended family where there's a grandmother, an aunt, a mother, somebody else to help them out. Most of them are in urban areas, they're alone, they're isolated, they have to figure this thing out themselves. And if you don't have, like you said, peer groups or other mothers who can say, you know what, this is actually not so easy. I also don't know what to do. Then we make the conversation more acceptable and we destigmatize mental illness, which unfortunately is real and rife.
Dr. Anusha Lahman from the African Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, thanks for chatting to us. Enjoy the rest of the week.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Family and make your life so much easier with 1UP Cash & Carry, where you get more for less and excellent customer service at its best. Remember, wholesale prices straight to the public. 1UP Cash & Carry, where you get more for less.
We got you with the pay-as-you-go Scarawarra bundle sale. Get up to 99% off on selected bundles, such as the 500 megabyte daily social bundle for only R5. Simply recharge and dial *136*2# and select Scarawanda Bundle Sale. T's and C's apply. Everywhere you go, MTN.
Visit Caltex Service Station, Vasco Boulevard near N1 City, which brings you 7 days a week car wash, 24-hour puncture repairs and essential motor spares. Also available 24 hours a day, plus 5-star service. Don't forget to swipe your Standard Bank UCount card, where you can get up to R5 back in rewards points per litre of fuel purchased with Caltex. For a cleaner, burning fuel, visit us at Caltex Service Station today.
Drive Time 91.3.